more member for a quorum, but we'll begin, I think, with some introductions. Welcome to our first Higher Education Finance Committee meeting of this session. I'd like to first of all begin by introducing our newest member, Larry Haas from St. Cloud. Larry, the initiation generally involves about a one-minute speech.
Well, Larry Haas is a real popular name in the House right now, I think, you know, so if and I would try to convince people that life is a bowl full of Larrys, but I probably cannot do that. I'm very happy to be here. I previously was a teacher and a coach, park and recreation director, and a county commissioner, so I do bring those items to the table, and I'm very excited about working with you.
Little trivia, my real name is Larry, too, but it's not to leave this room, okay?
I'd like to leave mine also.
I'd also like to introduce the committee administrator, who is also new, Mike Palou. So we have another Mike. Take a bow. The committee legislative assistant is Brooke Peterson. Our committee page is Stacy Holland. Is Stacy in the room? She is over there. Okay. And then we have two research individuals, Jason Awesome and Carrie Johnson. No? Huh? Nancy Johnson. Okay, well, that's not on my sheet. Okay. All right. Did I miss anyone? And we have a new vice chair, too, Dean Erdahl, who is late. Because we're late in getting started, we want to move as fast as we can here and hopefully adjourn at about 2:45. So at this time, I'd like to welcome Susan Giegard here to present the governor's bonding program. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Susan Giegard. With me, I have Mark Michikanis from our office. I also have with me Tricia Grimes, who's our legislative liaison, and she's right here in the front row, and she'll be someone that I hope you'll all get to know better. She does a lot of our work up at the Capitol here on legislative issues. Would it be helpful for members to have the kind of the larger bonding package for the UMNCU? I don't know if members have that, and we brought some extra copies with us.
What do you think? It would be.
Mm-hmm. We've got a packet for both the UN and UNSCU. I know the bonding, Mr. Chair, I know the bonding committee members have these packets, I think, but I don't think your committee has them. Mr. Chair, one more thing I wanted to mention that Jane Rankin from the Department of Finance is here as well. They also, Jane has a responsibility for bonding now at the Department of Finance, and she covers higher education issues. What I'm going to do is just go do an overview of the bill, and as I mentioned, I've got Mark and Jane here to help if you have more technical questions. That's probably not my area of expertise. This bonding bill, the total is $897 million. That's not higher ed, just higher ed. It's the overall bonding bill. And $811 million of that is general obligation bonding. That's money from the general fund. Just to provide some context, last year there was a $963 million capital budget overall, and many of those projects are still in the pipeline.
I should stop you for just a moment. We do have a quorum, so I officially call the meeting to order.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There are a number of projects that are still in the pipeline. There are many, many requests, and we know that a lot of these projects, you know, a lot of these projects are very important. The list does grow each year. This is the largest governor's request, both overall and higher ed specific, since 1998. Now, those of you who were around in 1998 remember that that was the last year of Governor Carlson's tenure, and we had lots of money then. But since then, this is the largest overall bonding and higher ed request that a governor has made. The governor is very concerned with fiscal constraint on debt service and operating budget costs, and one of the things that he is attempting to focus on are managing long-term expectations and commitments. You'll see in this bill a balance of Metro and Greater Minnesota projects. The overall amount for this, for the higher ed bonding is $270.1 million. And you'll see a mix of new projects and asset preservation. What I wanted to do, Mr. Chair and members, is kind of hit a couple of areas of concern up front with you, because I'm expecting there'll be questions in some of these areas. One of the main ones that's come to our attention is the concern about the HEPR, which is an acronym, of course, for the asset preservation funding that both systems get. Why was the number so low? And we've talked with the governor's office about this, and the governor has asked me to express to you that if you would like to move those numbers around, he doesn't, it's in your hands, obviously, but he doesn't object to that. He understands that there's some concern about that, and that moving some of the project money into HEPR would be consistent with his expectations at this point in time. There's a focus on sciences and research in the two systems, I think you'll see. There are some very expensive and large projects. When that happens, there's less money to spread around. And I'll just highlight a few examples of that for you.
We have a question.
Do you
want to pull your microphone around, Rep.
When you were on the HEPR, I was just wondering if you're going to share with us then how either the governor or you arrived at the HEPR number that you did. That would be important to know before we begin to talk about moving things around. If you're going to deal with that during your presentation, fine, but it would be helpful to know how you arrived at, I think it was $20 million for one system and $40 million for the other.
And 40, that's correct.
And what your expectations were with that 40 and 20.
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, if it would be okay, we'll address that a little bit later if I could just get through the overview, but I think that's a fair question and we'd be happy to talk about that with you. The three examples I wanted to cite when we're talking about big projects, if you added up, for example, the Leibovitz Business School at the University, that's a $26 million project. The Science and Student Services Building at the University, that's $40 million, $1 million project, and the Trafton project at MinSU, all important projects. But if you total those up, that's $100 million right there. So you can see that when you've got these larger projects, it really makes it more difficult to spread the money around. And I think that's just something important to keep in mind. Another, I think, a policy question is there's always this sort of tension, you know, how do you treat two systems, you know, whether it's general fund money or bonding money? Is it even? Is it equal? Do you sort of split the baby? You know, these are two very different systems, and so I think one of the questions, obviously, that you all have to wrestle with is, overall, how do you treat the two systems? Is it the same year to year? That's a tough one. And another thing that that I wanted to just mention is that each item was sort of considered on its merits. The governor tried to stay with the priorities laid out by each of the systems. You'll see in a couple of cases he jumped over some projects in the MinSU list, but by and large he did try to stick with the list with an emphasis on the math and science projects. For the University of Minnesota, there was a $206 million request overall, 80 for HEPR, and I'm just going to use the acronym if that's okay. The governor requested $127.6 million and 40 for HEPR for the university, and $43.6 million. The user financing works a little bit differently. It doesn't appear on the sheet for the U, but roughly there's $43 million. That's their responsibility. MinSU, the request was $280.7 million, 110 of which was HEPR. The governor is requesting $101.7 million, 20 for HEPR, $40.7 million in user financing for a total of $142.5 million. Would you like me to go through the specific projects, Mr. Chair?
I believe that'd be good.
Okay. Let's start with the University of Minnesota, I think, first. Is there anything, I'd like to see if Mr. Michikanis has anything he would like to add at this point in time.
No, Mr. Chair.
For the university, the first project, is the Carlson School of Management expansion, and that the request came in at $26.6 million. The governor recommended $26.6 million for that particular project. And I expect, Mr. Chair, if there are particular questions about the university's request, there are people, I think, from the university here in the audience also who could respond to questions. The Labovitz School of Business and Infrastructure, that was a $15.3 million request. The governor met the request at $15.3 million, and it's our understanding that there's a large private donor that they had lined up for that project, and they were concerned about losing that money if they didn't get funding for this project. There's a Science Teaching and Student Services building that was requested at $41.3 million. The governor funded it at $41.3 million. Medical Biosciences Infrastructure Phase 1, the funding was at $40 million, and the governor did not fund that project in total. He provided $4.3 million for that project. And then the governor did not fund the regional centers and stations in this particular initiative. For Minsky, as I mentioned, the numbers for the project, well, for Heber was 110. The governor funded that at 20. Mankato Traft and Science Addition and Renovation, that's a substantial project. It's an engineering and science addition. If you travel to that campus, there's some dangerous conditions in some of those labs and things. And so that was a very high priority for Minsky and for the governor as well. That was requested at $32.9 million, and the governor funded it at $32.9 million. St. Cloud State University, the WIC Science Addition and Renovation, the request was from the system was $14 million. The governor funded that project at $14 million. Century Community Technical College, there's a new science, new library building. The request was $19.9 million for that project, and the governor funded that project at $19.9 million. Then there were two projects that the governor did skip over. Fond du Lac Community College, that was a library addition and cultural center. The request was $12.3 million. The governor did not fund that. Moorhead, the McLean renovation, that was a $9.6 million request. The governor did not provide funding for that request either. Moving on down the list, in the sort of theme of science, Minneapolis Community Technical College, there's a science and health renovation, particularly with, I think with a focus on some nursing programs, et cetera, health sciences. There was a request for $18.8 million, and the governor funded at the requested amount. In St. Paul, there's a transportation and applied technology lab. That's not science per se, but I think any of you, if you've seen that facility as well, it's I don't want to say the dark ages, but it needs some renovation. And that request was a smaller request. That was a $3 million request, and the governor funded that. Bemidji State University, there's SATGAS Science, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, addition and renovation. That was a planning money for $700,000, and the governor funded that fully. The Community Tech College in Red Wing, there's a number of different improvements in this effort. There's a student services renovation and some other things. That project was requested at $4.8 million, and the governor funded that at $4.8 million. In Normandale, there's a classroom. Community College is a classroom renovation and addition. I think they're wanting to add on to the side of the building. I visited out there, and that request came in at $5.1 million. The governor funded that at $5.1 million. In Amber Hills Community College, there's a classroom renovation and addition. There was a request for some planning money at $700,000. The governor did not fund that. St. Cloud State University, the Riverview Hall renovation, that request came in at $4.5 million. The governor did not fund that. Moving down to Winona, Maxwell Hall renovation. There are a number of classrooms and things that would be provided in this renovation. That came in at $11.1 million. The governor did fund that fully at $11.1 million. Then system-wide, there's some projects in the science area, lab and applied technology across Minsky. That request came in at $5.1 million. The governor funded that at $5.1 million. The demolition initiative, there's several demolitions that Minsky requested funding for. The governor did not provide funding for that. That request was $1.6 million. And then property acquisition system-wide, the request there was 11.4, and I think, as you can see, you sort of ran out of money, and the governor partially met that request at $6.8 million. So unless you want me to go into more detail on some of these projects, that's just sort of a general overview for you and for the committee.
I just want to mention to Representative Abel and Dempsey, we apparently ran out of the handout, so you might just share with your neighbor.
We could share.
Okay. Are there any questions so far?
Soon.
Okay.
I have one question.
Representative Dempsey.
In regard to the funding for the technical colleges in Red Wing and Winona, when would that begin, and how much would go to each? I see there's an appropriation there of, 4.8 million, I believe. And I was just wondering when you would anticipate that might be started.
Ms. Hegard or someone
who doesn't know.
Pardon? Yeah, go ahead.
Mr. and Representative Dempsey, it's really a Minsky question, I believe, because if the money's authorized in this bill, yeah, the appropriation's immediately available. If they're ready to go with it, then the Department of Finance can cash flow it. To the extent they need bonding, they would have a sale later in the year, but it's really a question of Minsky's planning for the start date.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions at this time?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Pulaski.
Mr. Chair, I've got a question on the HEPR. I had requested in the Capital Investment Committee, when we took a brief overview of this, that Minsky provide a breakdown of the $20 million, how they'd use the $20 million. And I got that during session. A former representative, Bernie Ullman, gave me a copy. And I believe the chair also got a copy of that list. And this is part of Representative Carlson's question. I'm looking at, this is how Minsky breaks down how they use the $20 million. Mankato, for instance, in St. Cloud would get zero in HEPR. So my question is, when we're giving Mankato State, and I'm not arguing that the building isn't needed, a $32 million building, and then there's zero in HEPR, the first four items that are listed in Minsky for Mankato are a floor that is sunk, 40-year-old failing equipment, that's one, 40-year-old failing equipment two, 40-year-old failing equipment three, an elevator that doesn't work, and believe me, since being stuck with several members at Winona State for 25 minutes in an elevator, I fully understand that issue. And then if I go to St. Cloud, who also got zero, the first projects are leaking roof, leaking roof, leaking roof, leaking roof. So can I get some rationale on why we're putting up new buildings on campuses or new additions, and yet we have leaking roofs and 40-year-old, either, I assume this equipment is probably heating, cooling, ventilating equipment. Can you give me a rationale for that?
Well, Mr. Chair, members, one of the things that would have helped me, I did not have access, I don't know, maybe there were others who did, to a kind of a priority list for HEPR. I didn't have that to review. But I think you raise an important point. I mean, how do you strike a balance between maintaining the buildings and putting up new buildings? Again, I think that the governor's heard some of those concerns, so the number that's put out there, he's expressed willingness to move on that number, and I think it's very open to moving that number if you'd like to.
Well, Mr. Chair,
Representative Ms. Hegard,
I appreciate that, but was there any consideration here of the scope? I mean, there was a $110 million request, and we're looking at leaking roofs and failing 40-year-old ventilation systems. To me, is a failing ventilation system. If for no other reason it should be replaced, is because of energy. My assumption is if we replace these systems, we would probably see half or less of an energy consumption in a building that probably isn't a sick building. There was no consideration given to any of these when they stuck the $20 million in?
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Pulaski, again, I think perhaps, you know, one of the things that we'll do in the future is get a list. I don't know if a list was available in terms of priority for HEPA, but that would be something very that we'd find very valuable if we had access to that.
Mr. Chair, eight years ago, we had a discussion in this division on HEPA and other items dealing with priorities. And there was a gentleperson's agreement between the legislature, I'm going to use Minsky now, I'm not going to talk about the that there would be a priority on each campus of HEPA and new building projects that would be updated, that when anyone went to any of these campuses, that would be available. So we would never again be in a situation where a campus would be getting new construction and not doing construction or repairs on roofs, boilers, whatever it is. Now, am I to understand that somehow in Minsky that has been lost and there is no priority campus by campus on both HEPA and new construction? I'm not asking you, Ms. Hegar. If someone from Minsky would like to stroll up and say that there's no priority and that the governor was not aware of a priority, and that if I go to a campus right now, I cannot see a priority list.
Please, careful. Please identify yourself.
Get the chair. good morning. Afternoon, Mr. Chair. My name is Laura King, and I'm the Vice Chancellor for Finance for the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. Representative Pulaski, to your question, there absolutely is a list. And we've provided, I believe we've provided the staff with the list by campus in priority order for the $110 million request. And we routinely provide you with lists at other numbers as the process goes along. The campuses do maintain a list, and that's available anytime anyone's interested in looking at it.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Pulaski.
Mr. Chair. Vice Chancellor, I appreciate that answer, and it does me some comfort. Because when I asked this question last week in capital investment, I was told by Mr. Johnson that they don't prioritize HEPA, and that's why I brought it up today.
Let me, if I might, Mr. Chair, Representative Pulaski, I think I'm not answering your question. We do not prioritize HEPA campus against campus. We prioritize at each campus. When we get a number like $20 million, we end up with, I think, 35 or so campuses that get no HEPA. So you end up with a priority list campus against campus. But when we present to you our recommendation at $110 million, we do not present it to you in priority order, one campus against another. We have deferred maintenance needs at every campus.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate that, but my question was in capital investment about those priorities. Because I think that, I appreciate the campuses doing the prioritizing, because they are ultimately responsible for what happens on that campus. But when I'm looking at the disparity between how $20 million is spent in HEPA as opposed to this list of new construction, and I'm not arguing at all that the new construction isn't warranted or the additions aren't warranted, but it doesn't seem fiscally responsible to put up buildings of almost $40 million and then let four or five leaky roofs go. The long-term problem with this is, it's not just a leaky roof. We're looking at classrooms and infrastructure that could be technology, that could be an assortment of things that would have to be replaced if these roofs continue to leak, not to mention what happens with the heating and ventilating systems.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pulaski, we agree with you 100%. And that's why the HEPA request was our first priority, and that's why it was set at $110 million. Because we agree with our stewardship responsibility, and that's been the board's first priority since the merger.
Well, Mr. Chair,
Representative Pulaski,
what I suggest, the list you and I got, we should provide to the entire committee so that they can take a look at the Minsky side, what happens at $20 million. And, Mr. Chair, I'm not, again, arguing against any individual projects. I have projects in the bill, too. But certainly it would seem appalling if we're passing over 40-year-old needs, and not just at one instance, multiple instances on one campus.
Representative Pulaski, I think it's generally the feeling of the committee, and I'm speaking for the committee, and I haven't asked everybody, but I feel that we're probably going to have a different number than 20 when we're done. But the recommendation from this committee to the bonding committee will be substantially higher than 20.
Well, Mr. Chair, you know what I'd suggest you do? instead of taking it from new projects, I would hope you'd expand the bill completely by doing that. And you'd argue with the House leadership that the bill should just be bigger for higher ed.
Perhaps.
Perhaps.
That would be my encouragement to you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for your encouragement. Representative Abler.
Well, in the same encouraging notes, I just wanted to jump in on this discussion about roofs and damages and almost losing a certain school in Anoka over a heaper issue. If you recall, this is not an unreal situation that Representative Pawlowski brings up. The Anoka campus, Anoka Hennepin Tech, now Anoka Tech, was nearly closed over a roof issue. We found the money for the roof a couple of years ago, and they fixed it, and the thing's thriving. So the trouble with HEPA is it's not very exciting. Oh, we fixed a roof on a boiler and two elevators, and, you know, it doesn't get you to sizzle. It's not headline news. But it's really important, and along the lines that we're talking, I think that we just need to consider that first things have to come first. So good luck to us.
In the travels that I did over the interim visiting these campuses, that's kind of the message that I gave each site, is that we're very concerned about maintaining our buildings, and hopefully that's everybody's feeling. Representative Foster.
I just have one more point of clarification from Minsky. Is the list that the chair and I received, is this in the order of the ranking by the campus of the need for HEPA? I'm just looking at here. When I'm looking at the first one, which is 79 on this list, because of all of them, is this Mankato's number one? Do you know?
Mr. Chair, Representative Pawlowski, yes it is.
Okay, good. That helps.
They're in priority order inside the campus.
All right. Thank you.
Representative Carlson.
Chairman, I want to start with a comment, but I do have a couple of questions. This discussion reminds me of a few years ago we had the predated merger of the state university system before us, and they had 11 items on their list. The first 10 were new projects, and then they had roof repair, they called it then, listed as number 11, and the committee began to ask a few questions just like we are here today, and the chancellor was quick enough on his feet to say, before we even got to the end of the discussion, our number 11 priority is now our number one, because it was a rather strong feeling on the part of the committee that you do protect your assets and you do repair roofs before you start new construction. But I would second the comments that were made by two members earlier that we probably need to expand the size of this bill, and I understand with the targets that there's opportunity with our 3% limit to do that. But my question is the first one, how was the decision made or the process, what was the process that was used in arriving at these decisions? I guess I'm more used to historically working with the Department of Finance at this point rather than HESO, and I know that the role of HESO has changed. What was the process? Did you have meetings with the systems? I mean, how did you arrive at a decision to skip some priorities and come down to the number that you did on HEPA? And I don't think you've really addressed my first question. You know, how did you arrive at 40 and 20 for HEPA?
Mr. Chair and members, Representative Carlson, I should, you know, Jane Rankin should actually be sitting up here with us. I mean, the Department of Finance has been deeply involved, you know, with the bonding process. They've spent time on the bonding trips, etc. And so Jane has been very, very involved. We're not taking over the bonding responsibility at Finance. I think we're just another part of it, and part of the reason why we're presenting, you know, here is that it's the higher ed committee. But Jane has a responsibility for higher ed and bonding at the Department of Finance now that Lee Merkins has left. I think that's correct. So the process, I guess it's a and Jane, please, you know, feel free to step in. But there's a process of visiting campuses, looking at the various projects. There's discussions with individual campuses as well as with the system heads. We at our office also met with the chancellor and with President Brunix. So there were a number of meetings that occurred with finance staff, our staff, and the governor's office staff, if I recall correctly. In terms of a magic number, you know, we've got some history here that Mr. Michikanis can go through, but, you know, typically the HEPA number has I mean, there's no exact science, but it's usually been there's been a request of X amount, and then the numbers come in at slightly probably below half of that request number. Whether it's the governor's recommendation or what the legislature ultimately decided on, it's around half of the request amount. I think that's at least what our sheets show. In this instance, you know, I think that it was a balancing act, Representative Carlson, and your question is fair. You know, how do you balance preserving assets against new buildings? And it's as you know, in the legislature, it's a lot more interesting to talk about a new building sometimes than preserving assets, and I think that if we did have some prioritization, if we had access to that information, that would help us a lot when looking at the state as a whole and kind of how you're spreading those projects and things around. I think that would be very helpful to us so we could see a mix of the old and the new. I don't know if Ms. Rankin would like to add.
Mr. Chair and Representative Carlson, I'm Jane Rankin with the Department of Finance. I'm an executive budget officer in higher ed, and since last spring have also been the capital budget coordinator at the Department of Finance. And I would like to provide, to step back a little bit and provide a bit of a larger context for the process that the administration and the Department of Finance used this year in the capital budget. And that was essentially that we started this process back in May, because there is a statutory requirement that the legislature receive preliminary capital budget requests from agencies. You will all appreciate that that process was less thorough this past summer than it has been evidently in other capital budget summer sessions, but that was the starting point for the agencies to develop their priorities based on looking at their strategic plans and their missions, and that's what Minsky and the university did. And then they submitted that information to the Department of Finance. We spent the summer getting information from Minsky and all the other agencies. The budget officers were doing the same thing across all areas of the state budget so that Department of Finance was getting a better understanding of the requests and the agency priorities. And then there is another statutory requirement that it's directed at local governments who also have an opportunity to make capital budget requests of the governor and submit them through the Department of Finance. And there is a deadline with that process of November 1st. We internally at the Department of Finance kind of apply that same deadline to the agencies, expecting that at that point they are much more certain about their projects that they want to put forward and ask for funding. We expect them to have details pretty well worked out. Things still are somewhat in flux. As you know, even now in your other committees, if you sit on other finance areas and you've been hearing capital budget presentations from folks, you know that a particular project could still be evolving and the information on the project can still be changing some. But it was really only at that November deadline, I would say, that we stopped kind of taking in information from agencies and local governments and focused then on a process internally to start sorting through the projects and most importantly to enable the governor's office to take the broad cross-cutting statewide view, trying to prioritize and decide how you rate a project in higher ed against a project in corrections or human services. As part of enabling the governor's office to make those kinds of decisions, the Department of Finance had review sessions where we requested heads of agencies and we requested Chancellor McCormick and President Brunix to come in and make a presentation to walk through their particular capital budget requests. And there were governor's office staff and Department of Finance staff in that room. And again, the Department of Finance role is really to collect the information, to make sure that we have a good understanding of the project so that we can be available to answer questions that the governor's office might have as that determination gets made. But as you well know, Mr. Chair and Representative Carlson, the final decisions about what goes into the governor's recommendations are made by the governor.
Yeah, and members, if I can just make an announcement, we have copied the individual campus by campus request, the priority list, so you will all have one now. It's been handed out.
What I'm trying to get a handle on, I see when I look at the numbers, we've talked about HEPR, and I think you're hearing a lot of concern that there's real problems when you have leaky roofs that aren't being addressed. I mean, I think that's pretty basic. Just from the standpoint of good use of tax dollars, when you have a leaky roof, that probably means it's going to be more expensive to fix later than dealing with it right away. But when I look at the list of priorities, Mr. Chairman, maybe Ms. Hegard then can address that. I think Finance has adequately explained their role, providing the background information. And what I was really after was where these decisions were made. And I see that the University of Minnesota, although all their requests were not granted, the ones that were granted pretty much followed their priorities, other than the HEPR number being just cut right in half, which is, I find, rather interesting. Somebody made a decision that they're just going to get half of what they requested. There doesn't seem to be much history with that kind of a decision as to what the needs may or may not be. But when I take a look at Minsky, then I see that their priority list was not followed. And there were five projects then that were skipped over. And I would have as great or greater concern about HEPR there as well, being that they're only at the $20 million. You know, that seems like, again, kind of an arbitrary number. I'm a bit surprised, Ms. Hegard, when you said that you hadn't requested this kind of information or hadn't gotten it. I certainly would have requested it, so I would have known somehow where that decision was made, unless I misunderstood you, that you didn't have the HEPR information. Is that correct?
Go ahead. Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, the information that we got from Minsky was listed as it's presented in the budget document, which is by campus, and then all the individual projects at the campus are listed. But it as Vice Chancellor King earlier testified, there's no ability to take that information in the list and decide that Campus X Project 1 is a lower priority than Campus Y Project 1. You can't do it across campus.
Chairman, I think you could make some basic decisions somewhere in that administrative process where we're going to fix leaky roofs. I get a little concerned when there's testimony made by committee members that we're not addressing on some campuses things as basic as leaky roofs. So I understand what you're saying about the different priorities on the different campuses, but somebody would have to make a decision. I would think that, yes, we're going to at least fix the leaky roofs and many of the other items that were mentioned.
Representative Carlson, I just wanted to mention, no. I think when I saw the list, particularly from Minsky, I think every building seemed to have a leaky roof. So you could go all the way to the bottom of the priority list and you'd find probably a leaky roof of some kind. So that was a pretty common listed.
We have, Mr. Chairman, we do have a lot of roofs in the Minsky system. I mean, that's one of the reasons that's an issue. There's a person in the audience that I had as part of a project a number of years ago that dealt through an entire interim on the question of leaky roofs. Ms. Grimes, I think, could confirm that was a big issue years ago, so this is nothing new. But what is new is trying to get a handle on a new process of how these decisions are made, being that we now have your agencies involved. But enough on the leaky roofs. I think we've made that point, but I would like to know more about then the decision when we've got six projects that were ranked by the system, that were passed over and why they were passed over, and maybe you could comment on, for example, Moorhead. Why was Moorhead passed over?
Mr. Chair and Representative Carlson, to your point about, I just want to go back to the list. We had that list that you have, but again, it wasn't by priority, so I don't know. I just think in the future there may be some value to prioritizing within HEPR, and we'd be happy to work with, you know, talk with Minsky more about that, but I think there's some value there might be some value to going through that process. On skipping over some of the projects, I think that has happened in the past. This probably wouldn't be the first time, and again, I guess I point to my earlier comments when I talked about trying to have some focus on math, and on science and technology. I think if you look at the numbers of the project, for example, right after Moorhead and Fond du Lac, Minneapolis, the Technical Community College, that's a fairly substantial project as well, and that's a science and health renovation. So there was an attempt, I think, to try to have a focus on the sciences in this effort. And so I think the feeling is perhaps, you know, at another time, Fond du Lac and Moorhead could be, you know, the governor felt that those could be funded. It's not that they're not important, but I think he felt that some of these science projects were more important at this point in time.
And what could you refresh my memory, Mr. Chairman, what is the Moorhead project?
The Moorhead project, it's the McLean renovation. Let me see if I can find the right page for you on here. I don't have all of these memorized, Representative Carlson. It's on the big document. It's on page 32. It's basically a remodeling of 83,000 square feet of space, a 6,000 square foot addition to McLean Hall, K-12 teacher training, and some department and faculty offices for seven departments. So it's really it's offices and some classrooms inside of a building, but there isn't a specific focus on math, on science, on the sciences in this. In this project,
we don't really determine the description of what kind of classroom usage there would be, I assume.
Well, it's in some of the detail inside of the project. I can go through that and walk through some of that with you, but it's an older building. I mean, a lot of these buildings are old. I mean, this building was built in 1932. It houses several academic departments, math, mass communications, economics, history, political science, foreign languages, humanities, multicultural studies. And, you know, I think the goal is to try to renovate or reconstruct these buildings on campuses, you know, in a methodical way. But a lot of these buildings are old, and this is on the list. It's just, I think the governor felt that perhaps in another year, you know, in 2 years, it might be on his list, but at this point in time, and I think Moorhead had a project in last year's bonding bill that was a sizable one. I'm pretty sure there was one last year.
Mr. Chairman, I'll stop here, other than I find, when I look at the Senate body, rather interesting that Moorhead has skipped over. But thank you.
Representative Erdahl is ahead of you. Is that okay? Representative Erdahl?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Hegar, just a couple of questions, and I think one kind of echoes what Representative Carlson was getting at. I noticed that the HEPA request for Minsky was recommended by the governor about 18% of their request, and the University of Minnesota at about 50% of their request. Are the needs of the university then much greater? That's one question. The other, we now have in our hands a fairly informative summary of the HEPA request and prioritization by Minsky, but not such from the University of Minnesota. Is there something from the university similar to what we've just received from Minsky?
Mr. Chair and Representative Erdahl, we'd welcome information like that from the University of Minnesota as well, but to our knowledge, we haven't seen a document like that. But we'd find that valuable as well.
And the first question, are the needs that much greater for the University of Minnesota as compared to Minsky in terms of the percent of requests recommended?
Mr. Chair, I wouldn't use the percentages as a guide, although I know that's it's easy to go there, but I wouldn't say that the governor sees them as two very different systems, both very valuable to the state. Again, you know, the projects were big, and so again, it's hard to spread the money around when you've got large $20, $30, $40 million projects that you're funding. I mean, it's taking up sometimes a third of the request of the system, you know, when you're funding some of these larger projects. So, again, you know, we've heard, the governor's office has heard the concerns about the HEPR number. The governor has said he's willing to, see some movement on that HEPR number, and we're willing to work with you throughout the process.
The gentleman had their hand up there. Maybe he's from the university. But, thank you.
Welcome. If you would identify yourself, please. It's a tippy chair. It's the new carpet, if you've noticed. They've really upgraded. Yes, with some very soft carpet.
Mr. Chairman, members, for the record, my name is Richard Fitzwater. I'm the CFO and treasurer at the University of Minnesota. And we do have an $80 million HEPR list, and we have a $40 million HEPR list. We haven't been asked for that list, but by a few people. We'll be happy to provide it to the committee.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Thank you very much. Representative Abrams.
Mr. Chairman, just a few points. It would be important for me, in order to be able to analyze these requests, be able to take a look at what the legislature did last year and to view it as biennial bonding rather than annual bonding. Second, it would be very helpful when the systems come forward with their presentation, given the appropriations that were made last year by the legislature, to ask the question, where are these projects? How close are you being in the ground with them? How much has been banked? Because if all we're doing is funding capacity for 2009 or 2010, I'm more interested in projects that are ready to go, quite frankly, Mr. Chairman. And third, I think that Ms. Hegard made a very good point in which you don't have the same filter on the two lists. You have the university filter for their list, and you have the Minsky filter for their list. I'm not making any value judgment as to who had the tougher filter or who went through the more rigorous process or who has the greater needs. I don't know, but I don't think we ought to be getting into the game of saying, well, if you ask for 300 and you ask for 200, we're going to give you each 60% of what you ask for and call that good. I think that we have to, as a committee, go through the painstaking process of trying to figure out your one filter where the projects ought to rank. Knowing that, we'll send it to the Capital Investment Committee, and that they will probably do with that work that we do as they will, but at least we may want to go through that exercise in trying to prioritize within a budget where both lists and both priority lists ought to be. There is some observations in this area.
Good suggestions. Thank you very much. Any other questions from our members, for our witnesses?
Are we going to be hearing from the systems then today or something?
I believe that's Monday.
Monday. Okay.
We'll have probably a little time today if Minsky wanted to respond. But otherwise, it's Monday. So we could. Do you have any other additional information for us?
Mr. Chair, there was just a little follow up to Representative Abrams' question, I think. Mr. Michigan,
Mr. Chair, we do have some numbers from last year's bill, both on HEPR, because that is a focal point, and the toll for higher education for both systems. I can read those to you, Chair, if you use that's your preference.
Read those and probably also supply a written form for later reference.
And recall, members, that these were initially 2004 requests, but because of the delay of the year, the bill was passed last year. And what I'll give you, in fact, is the original request from the both systems, the governor's rec, and if you wish to set it in the House and the conference committee, but where the final conference bill ended up. Let me start with the University of Minnesota. Their HEPA request was $90 million. The governor had recommended $45.1 million, about half. The Senate was at $50 million, the House was at $36 million, and the final bill was at $40 million. So a little bit less than half. There was the HEPA number. The total for the U of M last year was $155.5 million. Of that, the governor recommended $100.4 million. The Senate bill was at $118.4, the House was at $89.4, and the final bill was at $108.4. For Minsky, their HEPA request was $100 million, and it's been that for probably 4 or 5 years, about that level. But their HEPA request was $100 million, the governor recommended $49 million. Which was actually, he had come up on some of his recs from the previous year, but that was the same year. The Senate was at $60 million, the House was at $46.4 million, and the final conference report passed by the legislature was $41.5 million. So again, not a little bit less, about 40% of the request. And then for the total for Minsky, they had requested about $275 million. The governor recommended about $100.3 million. The Senate was at $244 million. The House number I have here, I know is incorrect, so I'm sorry, I can't give that to you. The conference report was at $214 million.
We can provide that, Mr. Chair, to you and your members in written form if you'd like.
Okay, I think that'd be very helpful.
And some other history.
Chairman, I'm also interested in the project-by-project numbers.
Members, it's been pointed out that they're in the handout that we have. I'm not sure that all have the handout. They ran out. So make a couple of copies. It's at least as far as the university, is it from Minsky as well?
Yeah, from the Minsky.
So we'll need to make a couple of extra copies for those that did not receive the packet. Who did not receive the packet?
We need one.
Representative Abrams, do you have the complete package? Okay, about five copies, I think, we've covered. Representative Eastland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. See, it's kind of intriguing to listen to this conversation. We talked about these lists that are out there someplace about what all the EVA projects are on different campuses. And then we have the request, the EVA request every year. And then we fund something every year. Is there any place that we understand the entire EVA number that should be here this year, next year, the following year? I mean, if we funded 100% of it every year, what would that mean? I mean, the number grows out of nowhere. I would like to know where that number comes from. And then, if you look at all these projects that we're funding, there's a line here in place that says, "Well, we're going to remove deferred maintenance projects." Those are HEPA numbers. So we're funding some HEPA in some of these new projects. And I guess this thing is such a moving target. I think it's kind of almost impossible to try and understand it. And I guess, is there ever an attempt to kind of put together a 1 year, a 3 year, a 5 year, and a 10 year plan for HEPA so we know from each agency what their HEPA numbers are? and all these requests play against those?
Mr. Chair and Representative Eastman, maybe this is a good segue for the systems, because I think they're better positioned to answer that question for all of us.
Sure, that's fine. Welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, my name is Laura King, and I'm the Vice Chancellor for Finance for the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. The committee is at a really distinct disadvantage here today because you haven't had our full presentation. And it's too bad because you're asking questions that are terrific questions that I think our presentation goes a long way toward answering. And I think you're scheduled for that next week. Next Monday. A big part of our presentation is focused on our asset preservation program, which has been at the center of our capital budget program really since probably before the merger, although I wasn't involved with it at the time. As the committee knows, we are the stewards of about 26 million square feet of state-owned property. The university has, I think, about 28 million square feet, and everybody else in state government has the last third. So you really are asked to deal with a large part of the state's asset preservation in this committee, and that's why it becomes such a big topic of conversation. We do have 1-year plans and 3-year plans and 10-year plans for asset preservation, and as you'll see in the presentation next week, we also have a very detailed set of analytics that we go through to build the number. And you're right, the number seems to be $110 million every 2 years. We believe that we should be spending about twice that a biennium in order to preserve the assets that we already have, that we should be spending over $200 million every 2 years in order to preserve the buildings that you've already built for us and that we have students and faculty and staff in. We do different projects. We had almost 400 projects come in through our internal process in this category this time around. And the $110 million recommendation that we set forth for you funded 165 of those projects. So half of what we know to be out there in the $110 million. So it should be no surprise that when that number drops to 20 million, so many projects drop off the boards. The legislature has been very helpful to us in this area in the past years, and you'll see when we provide you next week with a historical funding chart that there has been a steady climb upwards in allocations for asset preservation, and we appreciate that because, as was said earlier, it goes right to saving money in the future by not having to fix the walls and the computer equipment and the carpet and the windows and the flashings that all fall apart as the roofs fail or the boiler fails. So the legislature has been a good supporter for us in this. One of the things that I really would urge us to think about is how the process works, because we have so many projects and we rely so heavily on the presidents and their facility staff to maintain their sense of priority, that it would be troublesome for us if this part of the capital process evolved into bonding bills that appropriated at the $100,000 or $200,000 level on a project-by-project basis. Because the debate moves through the process, the number moves, and we really have really cherished the flexibility we've had to fit the number into the most critical projects when the process is all over. And we're very, very able and willing and have consistently provided you with lists that show you our best thinking about what projects would get done at a given dollar amount. And you, in turn, have showed us the freedom and flexibility that we need when the process is over to fit that number out against specific projects. So we will happily provide you with the list of what projects are underway right now based on the last round of bonding, and similarly we can provide you with lists of projects that are our best thinking about what will happen at a given dollar amount right now. But this process takes 4 or 5 months and things change as we go along, so we view the list as being about 95% reliable until we get to actually doing the projects.
Representative Eastland.
Mr. Chair, Kind of a follow-up question is, I mean, we've talked a lot about leaky roofs. You know, if a roof leaks, there's a couple things you can do. You can fix the leak or you can replace the roof. I think there's a certain amount of responsibility of local campuses to do some repair. I think there might even be some statutory guidelines about that. What are they, and is that happening? Or is
absolutely.
That happening?
That's absolutely happening, Representative Eastland. And again, you'll see in the presentation next week that with your help, we have made substantial progress on cycling through all the roofs. We're not done yet, but you'll see a pie chart next week that shows the amount of roof work remaining has gone down, but we're seeing an uptick in the amount of work we need to do with heating, ventilating, and air conditioning systems that are aging out at the same pace as the roofs. We do a lot of work to keep the roofs alive longer than their useful life, but even at that, in the end, they can't be fixed again, and then they show up on the most critical list.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah, I think Representative Mariani was ahead of you, Representative Pulaski.
I'm not sure if it's on this point, I can answer.
Representative Pulaski.
It's on this point. Mr. Chair, Vice Chancellor King, what's being done in the new projects to anticipate the list of problems that we see here and mitigate them before they occur? I'm going to bring up roofs again. I'm a charter member of the Anti-Flat Roof Society.
I know.
It seems that every building that comes before us has a flat roof. Yet we know a pitched roof, well, I'm going to use a generalization, then you can correct me, and that would be all the more fun. So if you do a pitched roof, and we've seen that in our area, you can put the utilities under it, you can maintain them 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, and on some of our campuses, I know I have a couple, where a pitched roof has lasted 100 years. That's a pretty good payback to the state, in particular when we're looking at utilities. So are we taking a look in anticipation and saying that the old flat roof in Minnesota just isn't going to go, and we're trying to compensate in advance?
Mr. Chair, Representative Pulaski, we absolutely are. And this program, I think, was started back in the early 90s when we started working through all the roofs from an inspection standpoint, a maintenance standpoint, and then putting them on a replacement cycle. We don't build flat roofs anymore, and we haven't as long as we've had our hands on this program. Further, Mr. Chair, if I just add to your other question, we also have improved the design of the roofs such that we haven't doubled their life, but we've extended their life from... I mean, part of what we're struggling with here is that a vast majority of our stock was built at the same time to the same standards of the day. And we are smarter than we were then about building standards, and we've taken advantage of that in the way we design things like roofs. And that's added years as well.
Mr. Chair?
I just wanted to make a comment. I believe some of the replacement roofs, as I understood the trip that I was on, they also are factoring in a pitch.
That's
even
right.
On a flat roof.
Chair,
so the new
that's my clarification. See, a pitch roof to me looks like this. And a pitch roof to an architect is about a 3 degree or 4 degree or whatever it is. When I say pitch, this is pitch. It's not this.
I might have to meet you somewhere in the middle of the Mikulowski.
Because under this, you can't get the utilities. Under this, you can't.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
But with
these are the ones that last 100 years. These are the ones we're having the trouble with.
If you get not very much slope in at all, you solve most of your troubles because you create drainage.
Well, then, Mr. Chair, we still need to have a discussion about pitch.
Sure. All right.
Now, Representative Mariani.
Mr. Chair, I sense a pitch bill coming.
Perfect pitch.
Mr. Chair, Ms. King, I guess this is probably a clarification of Representative Eastland's question. Does the university meet some of the cheaper funds outside of state bonding dollars?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mariani, we have sort of a three-legged finance plan for repair and replacement particularly. HEPA is by far our most important part of that finance plan. As was mentioned earlier, we also, as a matter of course now, when we're doing major remodelings with capital funds but on a different line in the bonding bill, we also go in and do as much elimination of deferred maintenance as we can so that it doesn't later show up on the HEPA list. And then we have an expectation of campuses through their operating budgets, that they maintain the facilities in such a way that it doesn't add to the backlog. We aren't in a position of fundraising for deferred maintenance, if that's your underlying question.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I guess that's what part I was getting at. You know, the university system has its own bounding authority and obviously holds funds and raises funds outside of the state allocation process. So I'm wondering to what degree when you have to actually replace or fix something, if any of that at any point can be funded or is funded by those outside non-state sources.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mariani, I think you would want to talk with Dick Fitzenreiter, who's the University of Minnesota CFO, and because that's really where the outside bonding authority is. Or wishes.
Welcome.
Yes. Hi again. Members of the committee, yes, the university does have the capacity to issue its own debt to take care of buildings, and we do that for our auxiliary operations, our parking ramps, etc. Our problem is not, I mean, we're not going to let a roof leak. That's clearly not the biggest problem we have right now, despite lots of flat roofs. We make sure that they don't leak. A lot of them are worn out, need replacing. Frankly, our bigger problem recently is leaky cut point and leaky window frames. Water infiltration that's beginning to force the facades away from buildings. That's a big problem and an expensive problem. So, but our ability to fundraise to do those sorts of things is pretty limited.
And Mr. Chair, you're going to use your bonding authority to meet those?
If we had an absolute emergency, yes. The problem, of course, is you can have debt capacity, but then where's the cash to pay the principal and interest? And then you're trading off. And we do it. I mean, if there's a real serious emergency, we're going to take care of it. We have two of them right now that we're very worried about. Falwell Hall, I think when the committee toured, I think we mentioned to some of them, Falwell is a project you're going to see here in 08 as a major renovation that will, it's not a heaper project, as Representative Eastland said, but it is really a heaper. All the elements that we're going to do in that building are heaper related. We have Northrop Auditorium. The price tag on the water infiltration, we dealt with the roof ourselves. The price tag on the water infiltration on Northrop Auditorium right now is $21 million. Falwell Hall's water infiltration problem, the tuck pointing, is $15 million. We're struggling to figure out ways to find some money to take care of those two because the problem's getting to the point where it's got to be addressed. Our cut in our heaper doesn't help that problem. We may scramble some funds together from that $40 million for the part of the tuck pointing on Falwell, and we will scrounge around for other resources. We put aside every year in our regular operating budget money to meet the really big emergencies. So we don't have a leaky roof or we don't have a broken air handling system.
But then it's safe to say, Mr. Fitzgerald, that the primary source for the university to be able to meet in a primary way, any asset preservation, things that are falling apart, really is through heaper requests at this stage.
It is, Mr. Chairman, members, it is the heaper request and our request to renovate buildings. Now, I do want to point out that we're going to take care of a heaper problem when we hope you authorize the science classroom replacement project. That's a huge deferred maintenance heaper problem on the campus. And by building a new facility and taking the old one down, we do reduce the backlog of deferred maintenance. So you get through a renovation, you get through a heaper, and you do get through it when you build a new one as long as you're taking an old one down.
Representative Carroll. Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, while Mr. Fitzenreiter is before us, the question that came up earlier about HEPR and your discussion now and you referenced Falwell reminds me of information you've presented in years past, if you could refresh our memory what the backlog of maintenance is at the university. And you used to use a fairly general number, and I recognize within that there would be various priorities, but Ms. King referenced what their backlog was in a general way, you know, if we were to provide various levels of funding, you know, what was needed over time. So if you could comment about the university's needs in that regard.
Sure. Mr. Chairman, members, there's a couple, you know, you can do it a couple of different ways. I think one way the industry approaches it is, let's take the age of our buildings, and let's take the, you know, if the building is so old, we know the components of that building, they're at, you know, the industry standards, average useful life is X. And you can take that and do that little mathematical calculation on each building at the university based on its age and come up with the dollar amount it would take to replace everything that's been used up in its useful life. That's a huge number. I don't personally like that number because, okay, a window is designed to last so long, but it really isn't broken yet. It's still functional, but it's past its useful life, and because of that, it goes on this list, and the size of the deferred maintenance is so huge that it's insurmountable. We've kind of moved away from that approach and are now taking what one would call an inspection-based approach, where we're going in and doing, I hate to bring up death or dying, but forensic analysis. We're doing building forensics to go in and see what needs to be done in the buildings. I think our conclusion out of that is it's not our numbers are not dissimilar if we extrapolate that to all the buildings from what Minsky mentioned. We should probably be spending $100 million a year in either taking buildings down, renovating buildings, or fixing things through HEPR. We're falling short on that. To be honest, even calculating that number, it's probably unrealistic for us to actually be able to do that much in 1 year. Because once you're done doing the roofs or the tech pointing and you're into the buildings, you haven't got enough swing space to actually move people around to get to all that deferred maintenance. So you really end up having to stage it. It's just the reality of the situation.
Mr. Chairman, if I may just one question. This is a request, but we've been talking a lot about lists, and this is, I think, more of Minsky. In fact, it is of Minsky. There are a lot of requests, I assume, that aren't even on your priority list. I'm not talking about maintenance, but I'm talking now about things that would be below HEPR. And I'd be interested in seeing what kinds of projects were requested by various campuses that didn't make it through, for one reason or another, the Minsky list. And would be, my goal would be to kind of compare some of those requests, at least in a general way, with what did make it through.
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, do you refer now to the what we call the capital improvement projects? Or do you mean other HEPR projects that we didn't, I'm not quite following which.
Mr. Chairman, I said outside of HEPR. I said I'm not referring to HEPR, but those kinds of projects that would fall below your HEPR line here.
I see.
You've got a lot of campuses, and I assume that there were campuses that had requests that didn't make it onto this list. Maybe you can shorten your comments up. If everybody that had a request is on the list, that's one thing. If there are campuses that had a request,
if the question is every request on the list, no, we did not. And I'm drawing a blank, but I think it was about 3 to 1. So you have 26 capital projects in front of you as a recommendation from our board, and I think we had about 150 that we dealt with internally, at roughly. Or Sally, what was the? But we can provide you with something that shows what the campus has brought forward in various stages of readiness that we did not forward. Yeah. It was 68 projects, and we recommended 26 for a total of $315 million, and our recommendation to you is $170 million. So 3-1 on the projects and about 2-1 on the dollars.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know how many committee members are interested in that, but I'd like to see that then, if, being that you've got it available.
Sure. I can't attest to the freshness of the information, because once we didn't stop working on them, we stopped working on the data. But we can get you what started.
Do you have those packets? Okay, you want to distribute those to the members that did not get one? Some have left, I think, too. But up your hands if you can. MC? I'm not sure who was first. Representative Lance or Fox? Yes. Representative Lance?
It's like the chair.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'd ask the question of each of you. Would you say that, based on the last several bonding bills worth of HEPA appropriations, would you say that you are making, catching up, keeping up, or falling further behind on your asset preservation for your buildings?
Thank you. Michael Fisher.
Mr. Chairman, members, I think we're taking care of our most urgent and critical needs, but by no means are we keeping up.
So falling further behind and catching the worst ones first is yes. That sort of what you said? Okay.
Mr. Chair and members, we likewise are falling behind. We're falling less further behind than we were 8 or 9 years ago before HEPA got the kind of support it's gotten from the legislature. But again, it's our estimation that we should be spending $100 million a year to keep up. So anything short of that, we're not keeping up or adding to deferred maintenance. And so while, again, we're doing better than we were, and we're getting, at least until this year, we were getting enough resources to do the very most critical, we're not keeping up. We're making the state's deferred maintenance problem bigger because of the struggle to get HEPA funding.
Representative Lance.
Mr. Chairman, a follow-up question then. What would you do if we, if this committee or this legislature funded a substantial but HEPA-only funding bill for your systems?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to punt on that question until the President gets here.
You're allowed to do that if you want to.
But, it is a balancing act, and we have some needs beyond HEPA, and it is always a balancing act. I'll be honest, we'll be back next year for another dose of HEPA in hopes that you have another bonding bill a year from now.
I hadn't thought of that.
Is that your final question, Representative Lance?
Well, waiting for an answer from Vice Chancellor Kim as well.
Mr. Chair and members, it's really troubling to us because we look at this from the perspective of where the state's real estate is, and that's what informs our thinking about what the investment rate should be. So it's really troubling to us when we have 300,000 students and growing enrollments that we can't serve them both in remodeled classrooms and in classrooms that don't leak. So, Mr. Fitzenreiter, because we're with you next week for the full presentation, if you would allow us to think about that question, we would be ready to answer it next week.
I'd appreciate that. Thank you.
Representative Cox.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Fitzenreiter, I'm glad to hear that the university isn't doing away with products based on a useful or scheduled life. I think if that was the case in everyday life, probably everybody in here would have to run out and buy a new refrigerator, for example, because I think they give you a 9-year lifespan or something, but there's probably a lot of 20-year-old refrigerators here. And I think we all know that happens. My question is related to the HEPA. If you ever prepare lists that just keep rolling, in other words, if we'd ask for 8 years worth of your requests, the past 8 years, and to look at those and see where they're ranked and see which projects were completed using funded assets or funded monies from the legislature to address HEPA, but then some of them have got to be, as you talked about, they elevate themselves automatically, and you just have to deal with them. And then so you take you take a project off of HEPR list because it's something you've done. But then I'm curious to see when the rankings that we got, and we've got them right here before us this year, you know, what will fund a certain portion of that, what will happen in 2 years, do they change, do they do new ones come in and bump things off, you know, do they actually ever just disappear and are never attended to? You know, I suspect not really if they make it onto that list. But do you ever run you know what I'm talking about, just a spreadsheet where they just continue?
Mr. Chairman, members, it really just is a rolling problem. And, the you know, if we get the governor's recommendation of 40 this time, 40 will roll forward. And as I mentioned, probably be back next year, you'll see the same. You'll see those projects again. The only reason they wouldn't be on there is either it became such an emergency that we took care of it, or there was just a crisis of some large significance that forced us to take a bunch off and replace it with a different project that we didn't expect.
And
Representative Cox.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then if you did that, you just talked earlier, if we one of the projects here where we build a new building and you demolish the old one. The old one is carrying a bunch of HEPR on it if you don't get the new one. So then we would be able to track a bunch of HEPR projects that are removed from that master list because it's now been replaced with a new building.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Cox, that's exactly right.
Okay, and then final question, Mr. Chair. Do you, I know, you know, many, many higher private high institutions, I'm familiar with those, when they bring a new building online, you know, there's a certain amount of operating endowment that is set aside to operate the building, both for the operation of the just janitorial services and heat and lights and so forth, but also the scheduled maintenance that has to happen to the building. Does the university do that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Cox, I like to refer to that as funded depreciation on the building. And we do have a set formula that we require of our auxiliary operations and our non-state funded type projects where we're increasingly trying to put money away now because we know the carpet in the building is only going to last 12 years, and the windows are only going to last 20, and we set money aside today to try to address those when their useful life is up. That's a hard thing to do because other emergencies come up, the president changes, the Board of Regents change, and all of a sudden the cash you saved got spent for something else along the way. But we try hard. It is not easy to do on those projects that are funded with state money because it takes to do that, you've got to take the appropriation that we get every year and put it aside, and there's critical needs today. We do as a discipline try to do it on those, on our business operations like parking and housing and the like.
Thank you.
Representative Mariani.
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Kay, I have to apologize. It's been a while since I've been in committee, and I was asking the University of Minnesota question.
Well, if he hadn't been in the room, Representative Mariani, I would have answered it.
Mr. Chairman, I knew she was going to be here. I couldn't trust her.
Mr. Fitzgerald, I just wanted to, you know, really talk, I guess, back home the point of the importance of the state to be able to respond to these HEPR requests. And I was, you know, obviously digging around in terms of alternative, you know, your independent bonding you know, authority in terms of meeting some of those obligations. But the way those are paid off are through your students. And so in many ways, our ability to keep pace with those requests has, it seems to me, a direct relationship with our ability to keep you know, higher education affordable, at least in your system. For students, because otherwise, you know, the place where the balloon will kind of pop out might be to go to students and have them pick up a bigger share than they perhaps historically have had to pick up in the past if we fail on our end to meet our obligations.
Mr. Chairman, members, that's particularly important on HEPR. I mean, we all know you have the two-thirds, one-third responsibility now on new buildings and renovations. At least on the HEPR, which is 100% funded by the state, there's no pushback at the students. And we'd certainly like that policy preserved, although we've certainly heard last session that some were advocating charging us a third on HEPR towards the end of session. But ultimately, if we have to take care, if we issue the debt, take care of an emergency, it's either going to come out of our operations budget or it's going to impact students.
Representative Pulaski, you have the honor of the last question.
This will be quick, I hope. I would just like this is for Vice Chancellor King. Can you describe the system-wide demolition that wasn't funded by the governor? Can you just give a brief overview of what that entails?
Certainly, Mr. Chair, Representative Pulaski, do members have the what we call our bonding book in front of them? If they do, and you turn to page 10, sorry? 16, is that one here behind me? This one was particularly intriguing to us, the lack of support from the governor on this one, because I'm told that there were some remarks made in his presentation of the bonding bill about the size of the system and the number of our buildings.
What page are you on?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, I'm on page 15. Well, it's page 15, hyphen 16, which is to reference the project number. And so it was a puzzle to us that after having concerns about the size of the system, we didn't find support for a proposal to demolish some of the buildings. We have been trying for several years now to aggressively identify obsolete and no longer useful, mostly outbuildings, that we can take down and take out of service or take off the rolls. And that's what this proposal contemplates. You'll see there's five campuses, Canby, St. Cloud, Marshall, Austin, and Winona, that would provide for the demolition of about 125,000 square feet. That would either turn into vacant land or a vacant parcel adjacent to the sponsored campus. And so this is our continuing effort to get rid of deferred maintenance, to get rid of HEPA requests, to get rid of heating bills, security bills, etc. And so it was not supported by the governor.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
We have minutes from May 4th of 2005 that we need to officially approve. Representative Carlson moves the minutes on May 4th of last year. All those in favor?
Aye.
Minutes are approved. With that, our meeting is adjourned.